Hey, over the weekend, I got into that. You know, we interviewed the author of Love and Death, the Kurt Cobain book.
Yep.
That is a fascinating book. You know, it was neat talking to the author, and he made some great points and all that, and he's talking about how he thinks Kurt was murdered. He didn't commit suicide. And, of course, I don't know. I really have a hard time with that, you know, especially because there's a suicide note. But if you read the note a certain way, you can be led to believe, I guess, that Kurt was talking about breaking the band up, not breaking his life up.
Right. It wasn't to the very end where he hand wrote some things.
But, man, oh, man, when you read this book, I tell you what, the fascinating thing about this book is not whether or not you believe Kurt was murdered or not. It is what a nut Courtney Love is. Did you read much of this?
Some of it. Quite a bit of it.
She is so crazy.
Yeah, no, she's absolutely insane. I mean, she's all over the map. And, I mean, he had so many tapes of her talking. Not to mention the interviews and all that sort of thing. There's so much on her. And, oh, my gosh, she is. She's all over the map.
She is just, it's really fascinating. Kind of, he puts together the events surrounding the days prior to Cobain's suicide / murder, whatever you want to call it, and what Courtney Love was doing, which to me is 20 times as interesting as what Kurt Cobain was doing.
Oh, definitely.
Because she was wigging out because she couldn't find her man. Tom Grant, the L.A. private investigator, who really was the heart of this book.
Yeah, that's the guy that she hired to find out about Kurt.
And he taped everything. He taped every conversation with Courtney Love.
Yep.
And so he finally agreed to share his tapes with these authors of his book.
He had refused to do up until then, exactly. Made, I think, hundreds of hours available to them.
He had always claimed these tapes were a crucial part of his case proving that Kurt had been murdered, but had refused to play them for the authors, saying he would turn them over to the outside law enforcement agency only when the case was reopened.
And again, this is where she hired this guy, and after all of his research, he came to the conclusion that she did it. Which is just too funny.
Yes, that's kind of a drag. Paying someone to tell you that you did it.
I know, that's so comical.
So he starts playing snippets for these guys while they're writing the book, and they're just, of course, you know, teased beyond belief. Mm-hmm. Hearing these snippets, they want to hear more and more and more. But to their mounting frustration, he consistently refused to let them or anyone else hear what he called the most damning evidence, the Cobain case. Now, we convinced Grant that if he genuinely wanted the case to be reopened, it was time for him to be a little more forthcoming. When we first heard Grant's murder theory in the spring of 1995, we were highly skeptical. In the world of rock and roll, conspiracy theories are a dime a dozen. He gets in talking about Brian Jones, Jimi Hendrix, Elvis Presley, all that stuff. So they visited his Beverly Hills office for the first time in 1995, and the author says it didn't take long for us to realize that Tom Grant was not your typical L.A. gumshoe. Surrounded by photos of his 7 grandchildren, the stocky, clean-cut private investigator looked more like a bank manager or a university professor than somebody who made his living chasing down sleaze. Nor did he look like the kind of person whose music collection contained any albums by Nirvana or Hole, which was a relief to them to some degree because they thought he might be just some wayward fan. So, if there are any skeletons in his closet from his days on the force, they couldn't find him, and it wasn't for lack of trying. Each of his former colleagues whom they interviewed had nothing but praise for Grant's skills, saying he was a highly respected police officer. After his music shop went under, Grant worked as a security consultant for a number of celebrity clients, including Sammy Davis Jr. and Sandra Locke, before becoming the lead investigator for former FBI agent turned PI in 1990. 3 years later, he started his own firm. So they meet Grant. They were stuck by his integrity. And I'm trying to get to the tapes here somewhere. Let's see. I've been told I'm not much of a businessman, Grant confesses. That's probably why his music store went belly up. One caller suspecting her husband was having an affair asked Grant to install a hidden surveillance device in his office. Grant's refusal was immediate. That's illegal. I don't work like that. Let me get to the Courtney part because this is the truly amazing stuff. Her husband, Courtney tells Grant, and Klugman, his partner, is Kurt Cobain. He escaped from an L.A. drug rehab 2 days ago and hasn't been seen since. She lied during the initial phone call, she confesses. In an attempt to limit Kurt's movements, she has had his credit card canceled by falsely claiming it was stolen. This is already scary. I mean, imagine having a wife like this who does pull stuff like this.
Yeah, behind your back, exactly.
To help locate her husband, she wants Grant to call the credit card company and get a list of all transactions made on the card before it was canceled. At this point, Grant informs her she doesn't need a detective for that, but can do the job herself. I'd have to charge you $50 just to make a phone call, he says. What? That's not enough money for you? Courtney snaps back. She tells them Kurt has only one credit card, and without it, he has no access to money, since she has also had his bank cards canceled. Well, no wonder this guy committed suicide if he did. When Grant asks whether Kurt can obtain funds from other sources such as friends, Courtney tells him that Kurt is totally helpless and has no friends. This guy can't even catch a cab by himself. Then Courtney tells the pair that she believes her husband is suicidal. He has bought a shotgun and she fears he may be planning to use it. Everybody thinks he's going to die. Grant and Klugman return to the offices to get a form for Courtney to sign authorizing release of Kurt's credit card records. By the time Grant returns to the peninsula later that afternoon, Courtney is frantic. She's apparently taken his advice and phoned the credit card company herself. Kurt, she discovered, had booked a plane ticket about half an hour after he left the rehab on April 1st. He paid $478. This, it turned out, was the ticket used to fly from Los Angeles to Seattle, but appears this wasn't his only purchase. At 5:30 p.m. the same day, while he was still at Exodus, the rehab place, Kurt had used his MasterCard to purchase two other plane tickets on United Airlines. The credit card company could not ascertain the flight date or the destination for these two tickets, only the amount he had paid. Courtney tells Grant that Kurt may be going east to stay with his friend Michael Stipe, the lead of his favorite rock group, R.E.M. Stipe had invited Kurt to record with the band in March before the Rome overdose and had even sent a plane ticket, which Kurt never used. I don't know where the hell he is, Courtney says. I was figuring he goes up to Seattle and picks up his guitar and then he flies to Arizona or Atlanta. R.E.M. are recording in Knoxville. He has two tickets. I'm curious if he bought a plane ticket for somebody else. So this therein really lies Courtney Love's interest.
Right.
She thinks he's playing around.
Exactly. That he's got another girl going and the ticket is for that other girl, not for her.
So she wants Grant to hack into the airline's computer system. Now, this is amazing how resourceful she is.
Yeah.
And how many things she's aware of and how many great ideas she has.
Mm-hmm.
But she's really crazy. I mean, just nutso to find out. It's not like... In my opinion, it's not that she just wants to know where he is or she's so worried about him. She just wants to know what he's up to and what he's doing, and she feels she's entitled to information she's not entitled to. If you catch my drift.
You can say it exactly that way.
Well, you read it. You've
that's
read enough
exactly
of the book to know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. No, that's what it is.
She tries to persuade Grant to hack into the airline computer system. She wants to know whether Kurt has taken a flight out of Seattle.
Can you imagine? Hack into the system.
Yeah, I know.
Jeez.
Well, the amazing thing is that there are people that do stuff like this.
Oh, sure there are.
For the right price.
Oh, yeah.
And would love to do it, especially for someone like her. But
mm-hmm.
that's what the authors like about Tom Grant is he's not that kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's your basic PI with too much heart, a little too much integrity. She wants to know whether Kurt's taking a flight out of Seattle, if so, with whom he's traveling. Tell him it's done all the time. She tells him she'd be willing to pay a hacker $5,000 to tap into the computers of Delta and United Airlines. If he's taking those plane tickets, I want to know where he's gone. Grant demurs, yeah, and then the next thing you read about me is that a major PI in Beverly Hills has been arrested for computer hacking. But Courtney's persistent, urging him to hire some sleazeball to do the job. She tells Grant she grew up on Nancy Drew, so she knows how these things are done.
How absolutely ridiculous.
Grant tells her that even if he wrote a check for $300,000, he still wouldn't break the law because it's not worth the risk of going to prison. Whatever I do, I'm going to do it legally. From the tone of Courtney's voice, it's obvious that she's in a panic about the second plane ticket. Grant soon finds out why. I think Kurt wants a divorce, she says. If he wants a divorce, that's fine. If we get into a divorce and it comes down to a custody battle, I'd win in a second. She shares something with... She shares something else. Kurt had left her a note in Rome in which he says he's leaving me. At this point, Grant is still unfamiliar with much of the couple's history, and he knows nothing about Kurt's recent overdose in Broome. So this revelation means little to him.
Yeah, that's where supposedly that he wrote a suicide note after that Rome situation where he came out and had the old strawberry malt.
Yes.
When he came to. But then, after all this time has gone by, then Courtney reveals that this note wasn't a suicide note, but rather telling her that he was going to leave her.
How many times are you going to mention that strawberry malt, by the way?
Do you have
some money involved
in
that?
Every time that story comes up, I think, boy, does that sound good. Strawberry malt.
It does sound good, doesn't it?
Boy, it sounds so good.
I have to tell you, vanilla malt sounds better to me, but a strawberry malt would be fine. Courtney proceeds to tell Grant about the prenuptial agreement she and Kurt had signed before their wedding in February of 92. Despite our prenup, my name is on all our homes and all our assets. I don't want a divorce out of this. The only way a divorce will happen is if I bust him for infidelity. Then she confesses she fears exactly this scenario. She's convinced that Kurt is having an affair with a Seattle heroin dealer named Caitlin Moore, who she says has a history of having sex with rock stars. That's not how she puts it, but... Courtney tells Grant she's convinced that if Kurt is in Seattle, he's with Caitlin. Now, isn't this like the most obsessed person?
Yep.
I mean, it's Caitlin. It's this drug dealer. And she just, it's almost like she wants it to be true or something.
She can't get it out of her head.
Exactly.
Once it's in her head, that's that.
She asks him to bug the drug dealer's house. Again, Grant refuses.
Jeez.
Courtney then reveals that she's already had it sent a friend over to Caitlin's house with $100 to buy heroin as an excuse to see if Kurt was there. He wasn't. She tells Grant that Kurt has a pattern of using girls and says, if he's having sex with her, look out. Her tone softens. She tells Grant that she and Kurt have a good marriage, but she thinks he's upset at her because I'm so anti-drug that whenever Kurt does drugs, they fight.
She wasn't doing drugs. I mean, give me a break. She was on heroin all the time when he was as well.
Well, in the next sentence, she says, when he brings drugs home, I do them too, she says. She tells him that even Kurt's mother is terrified of him now, claiming that Wendy abused him a lot when he was a child, but now Kurt appears to have forgotten about it and forgiven her. She's almost like Omarosa, isn't she?
Mm.
I mean, everyone she mentions who's associated with Kurt, she has some reason for tearing them down, except for her, of course.
Of course.
She then confesses that the day before, she planted a phony story in the press that she'd suffered a drug overdose in a ploy to attract Kurt's attention and get him to contact her.
Oh, how weird.
A reporter from the AP has now called asking about the incident. Courtney asked Grant what he thinks she should tell them. My record's coming out in 8 weeks and all publicity is good publicity. What should I tell the Associated Press? All publicity is good publicity.
Yeah.
I don't know about a drug overdose.
Yeah, not really. Isn't that something to plant a story?
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
About a drug overdose.
Yeah, yeah.
To flush out your husband.
See, she's always trying to get people to do all these unseemly things in her behalf because of some wild obsession or some crazy thought.
Now, it gets even more interesting from there, and we'll come back to it. We do have to break, though, and get to Trudy News. But this book, Love and Death, if you're a Kurt Cobain fan or a Courtney Love hater, this is a really interesting book because there's so much about Courtney Love and about what she says on these tapes.
Yeah.
And these tapes are fascinating.
Yeah.
Just fascinating. And also over the weekend, I got the new biography out about Julia Roberts, which is quite interesting
as
well.
A new biography on Julia Roberts?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
And the title,
I haven't even heard about that.
The title of this should be, What a Slut.
Is that right?
She is amazing. Just a little teaser out of that. When she gets together with Danny Moder,
yeah,
that geek camera guy,
yeah,
and they get an apartment outside this movie they're making together when she gets him a job,
mm-hmm.
And the apartment had just a mattress on the floor.
Oh, geez,
that's and no
all
sheets.
She needed, huh?
So she lived in an apartment of skank with Moder. Isn't that gross?
Yeah.
At this point, she's like 33 years old too. I mean, she's a movie star.
Weird.
She got all this money. She's making like $12 million a movie.
Jeez.
And she's living this life of skank with Moder. Back with more of the Courtney. Got to hear more of Courtney. This will just—I'm telling you—it is riveting stuff. And also, we've got Kathy